This is the Pressure Tested Podcast with Kelly Roberts.
Well, I think we have to change the paradigm of what we're telling our kids.
There is something to the networks. Men have mastered that, and women, I think, are still catching up to that.
We interview women who are changing the game in construction and beyond.
She thinks differently than all you guys. She's a female.
I could have sold the business, but I couldn't have. Right. There were too many people depending on me.
Today on the show, we interview Rachel Kennedy, the chief lightkeeper of Southern Lighthouse.
It is a massive missed opportunity not to use your voice and not to use it on LinkedIn.
Rachel is changing the construction industry by advising leaders on how to use LinkedIn to promote their brand and attract talent. A mother of two and a founder who built her business during the pandemic, Rachel is undoubtedly ready to put her expertise to the test.
Because so many companies don't invest in their leaders' personal brands, and it's just a muted channel.
Rachel, thank you so much for coming on the Pressure Tested Podcast. I'm so excited to have you here. Tell me about tennis. Have you played tennis your whole life?
I am so excited to be here. And I was 11th seed in middle school, which was like right in the middle of the pack. Did not pick it up again until about 2 years ago. So I am sort of relearning tennis and I want to be good. I'm not there yet, but it is a really great way to get exercise, be with other women, but also like clear my head. That's not work and it's not parenting. So I love that third space that I can just sort of think about just what I'm doing in that moment and stay in the moment.
I think that's super important. I've heard a lot of different people with, like, Mark Zuckerberg is somebody I've heard talk about that a lot, where he has to find an activity that he can, has to stay completely focused on the activity in, because that's the only way he can really clear his head. Like, if he was to go for a long run or something, that doesn't clear his head because he's still left with all of his thoughts. So, but you know, I have to ask you, if you play tennis, do you also play pickleball?
I have played pickleball. To be honest, I am such a fan of tennis that it just makes me feel better when I can make the ball go further. Pickleball was a little frustrating. I found myself just like, I want it to go further and hit it harder. But so I like it, but I love tennis.
I get it. I play both, but I grew up playing tennis, and like, I'm by no means great at tennis, but I love tennis. And I did switch over to pickleball because we have pickleball courts here.
Oh, nice.
And pickleball is fun, but I agree that you really don't get the satisfaction of like how hard you can hit a tennis ball with pickleball. You just don't. Like, you can put a full force hit into pickleball and it just does not go very fast.
100%.
Okay. So I'm glad we got that out of the way. I want to hear about your full career progression, how you got from where you started to here.
Yeah, I graduated from Austin College in Sherman, Texas, a teeny tiny little school that really encouraged people to travel. So I had saved up all my money from like 2 years, and I decided to backpack the year after I graduated, partially because I had no idea what I wanted to do in life, and it just sounded fun. So I got to spend the year after I left college living in dorms, eating bread and cheese on like no budget. And it really allowed me to kind of see the world and see that people live in lots of different ways, not just the way we live here in North Texas. So that was a pretty mind-opening experience, and met some interesting people along the way, including two people who had been in the architecture industry in Dallas. And they said, hey, you know, I don't know what you're going to do now, but you should come and check out this construction company, Beck. And I was like, well, I don't really own a hammer, so I don't really want to do construction. They said, look, you're good with people. You can work in HR and recruiting for us. So I went to work for the Beck Group, and I was there for 8.5 years leading their recruiting programs. I really loved the interns. We built this internship program, and it was really meaningful going to all of these colleges, finding students who were really passionate about building, and watching them come to Dallas from all over the country for the summer. We started a community service project every summer. Just we found it was part of the values of the company, but also it allowed those interns to build a relationship with each other and really bond. So one summer we went to rebuild a home after Hurricane Katrina had hit. Mm-hmm. We're sleeping on the gym floor. There's a lot of snoring going on, like, but it really allowed them to come together. And, so like building communities really was important to me. And then, you know, I helped recruit for all positions in the company, but I realized we're putting so much emphasis on this internship program. These kids are going to school, but there wasn't really a program to develop employees. So I worked with my boss to develop a mentor program. And Joe Flores was my boss, and continues to be an amazing mentor to me. And I was like, I don't know, do we kind of get permission from the CEO? Do we kind of come up with a budget? And he said, no and no. Ask for forgiveness. Don't ask for permission. Let's just do a pilot program. Maybe there's 20 people in it. Let's see how it goes. And ask for forgiveness, not permission. So we did, and it was a huge success. And it doubled the next year, and continued to be a really meaningful program for people.
So this was a program for senior level people at Beck to start kind of transferring knowledge to the younger people at Beck?
Yeah, it was. And the interesting thing about Beck, it's architecture, it's construction. And we also wanted to kind of break down those barriers between I'm a designer, I'm in the field. You know, we also had like our CFO was a part of it. Somebody in marketing was part of it. The technologists were part of it. We really just wanted to build community in whatever way that meant. And some people wanted career growth. I want to see what it looks like to be a senior woman. I want to understand what it's like to be a designer because I don't come from that background. So it was a really powerful program for helping with career growth, but also breaking down barriers and building community.
So mentors were not matched on, you know, the CFO didn't take an accounting admin, but they were across the company. So people would kind of get all different types of perspectives.
Yes, exactly. We had them fill out a survey ahead of time, kind of what do you want to get out of this experience? And so we matched them up based on what they were looking for, but also what they had to offer. And I found that so many people were hesitant to be mentors. Everybody wanted to be mentored.
Yeah.
So, you know, it took a few conversations or convincing of like, hey, I think you'd be a really great mentor. I think you have something to offer. And people were like, I've only been here for 4 years, or, you know, I don't have a degree. And it was like, it doesn't matter if you've not been here for 15 years. It doesn't matter if you don't have a degree. You have something to offer.
Why do you think people have such a hard time with that? I mean, I think that that's so common because they lack the self-awareness to know that they really do have knowledge that they can impart on somebody younger or even somebody their same age, or they just like, it's like a confidence thing. It's like they just don't have the confidence within themselves. Or is it a time thing? I mean, because today I had breakfast with somebody that I really like, but I also had a ton of things to do, and I don't know if I helped her at all. Really, I have no clue. I don't know if I imparted any wisdom on her. I mean, I'm older than she is, so that's a check, and she's a woman, and that's a check, but I don't really know if I imparted any wisdom, and it's like, I don't know if that was the best use of my time or even the best use of her time. And so is it time? Is it confidence? Is it, you know, what is it?
Yeah, I think there's a ton of reasons why people are hesitant to participate or kind of see themselves as a leader. Often you need that outside perspective of someone saying, no, you do have value, you know. And I think in your case with breakfast this morning, you may never know the value of what that did for her. And, you know, she may not recognize it for a few weeks or a few months, but I think the intention is there. You know, you spent time, you made an effort, you probably listened to her. So all of that has tremendous value.
I hope so. And I try to say yes to stuff like that. And then sometimes I'm like, why do I always say yes to stuff like this? Because at some point, like, you have to kind of monitor what you're giving out because you only have so much to give.
Yeah.
Which I think is another reason that, you know, mentorship is hard. Because if you only have so much to start with, like, you have to figure out what buckets you can kind of give to that day. And sometimes you don't always have the ability to give to somebody like that. So
it's so true. I always get tears in my eyes when I'm on a flight with my kids and the stewardess comes by and says, put on your own oxygen mask first. Mm-hmm. I'm like, why? Why would I do that? You know, and she's like, because they can't give it to you.
Yeah.
You're in charge. You have to take care of yourself so that you have something left over to give to them.
It's so funny that you just said that. That's like such a mom thing to think about because I also think about that. Like every time I read that, I always have my headphones on when they're talking and there's probably a lot to unpack there, but we'll leave that alone. But I always read through the thing because then I'm like, okay, what if we die? So I'm going to read through the thing even though I've read through it 1,000 times. And I'm always like, that's interesting. I've got to put the, you know, Because you do. You have to take care of yourself first, but otherwise there's nothing to give to anybody else.
Yeah, that's true. The other thing that I think about on planes is when there's a little turbulence, everyone looks at the flight attendants. It's like, if they're freaking out, I will freak out. If they are calm, I will stay calm. And so I think as leaders in our industry and in our business, people are looking at us. Do I need to be freaking out right now, or are we going to be okay?
That was amazing. I think that I always look at the flight attendants because I think that exact same thing. I'm like, I'm going to check out what she's thinking about this. Because, you know, there's like those moments when they're like, go ahead and put your seatbelt on. And they sit down and put their seatbelt on. But if they're just like chatting it up and staring at their cell phones, like they do not care, then like I do not care. But I have never once thought about that from the perspective of somebody that works for me and like how to keep it cool. That's never even occurred to me. So that was a breakthrough moment. Okay, so tell me, so what years are you at BAC?
So I started in 2007, and the interesting thing about 2007 was I came in October, and by May, we are just handing out offer letters like wildfire. Going to A&M, going to OU, going to Texas Tech. Kids are getting 6 and 7 offer letters upon graduation, asking for signing bonuses, asking for truck allowances. I mean, stuff we had never seen before, trying to hire as much as possible. And we come into 2008 and we start having conversations. Hey, these jobs didn't go, or we're going to have to pull back. We're going to have to lay off. We're going to have to let go. And as a 22-year-old, suddenly my job went from hiring and having great conversations and making offers and having these exciting moments with college graduates to having really, really hard conversations and sitting across from someone and saying, today is your last day. And it was incredibly hard and incredibly stressful, and not why I got into the business of HR or recruiting. The hiring is a lot more fun than the firing. Oh,
yes.
And I remember calling my mom the night before I had to do a layoff, and I said, I can't do this. This is too hard. Like, I'm going to have to sit across from this woman and tell her it's her last day, and this is her only income, and this is her salary, and it's going away. And she said, stop. It's better you than someone who doesn't care, because you really care about this person. So that was a really huge challenge for me to kind of refocus on, like, this is a business decision. This is not personal. You know, part of your job is being flexible, and you have to transition to do whatever is needed in the business.
Have you ever seen that George Clooney movie where his job is to fly around to the different companies and just let people go?
Yeah, up in the air.
Yes. So kind of like two ideas, right? The idea is, you know, you care about the people that you hire and you embrace them and you kind of give them everything that you've got. And the other idea is you don't really do that with anybody because you understand you're kind of like one business decision away from letting them go. Like, as somebody who's been through this, there's a lot of women out there that have to make decisions like this every day. Like, what's the middle ground on this? Because you can't, this is something that I truly struggle with on how close I can get with the people that work for me, because what if one day I have to let them go? And like, that's a huge emotional toll. I mean, anybody with half a heart, like if you really invest time and you care about somebody, you know their kids' names and you know their dog's name, you've met their kids, you've met their dogs, you know where they went on vacation. It's like you become so invested from a personal level. And then the day comes that somebody above you says, hey, you're gonna have to let these people go. Like, what's a good middle ground for a working relationship?
That's a hard question. I don't know that I have a great answer. You know, I think at the end of the day, like, we have to let people know we care about them personally, whether or not we're working together or not. You know, it's like, I want to continue to have a relationship with you. I care about you as a person. The business right now does not need this role. And that's it. So
it's kind of like that whole idea where people are like, you know, it's not personal, it's business. And then there's this other idea is it's not true. Like, you know, it should start with being personal. Like, the whole point is to, the whole point of human interaction is for it to be personal. So yeah. I think that that's something that a lot of people struggle with. I would say that women struggle with it a little bit more than men, just because they're more likely to form relationships in the workplace. And like, I mean, and that's true and not true. Like, I mean, I know my husband, he's a very social, like, he is going to go to lunch with everybody. He's going to know. He's going to, like, for the first, you know, 30 minutes of his workday, he's going to walk around and talk to everybody. And it's like, yeah. I don't necessarily have that, but he does. Yeah. And so it's just an interesting idea of how, like, where do you keep relationships in the workplace?
That's so hard. I mean, I love working with people, mm-hmm. and I hope it never ends, yeah. you know? And I think that the nature of our world is jobs come and go, and people come and go, and relationships come and go. Yeah. But you're right. I think I get so much value out of long-term relationships, mm-hmm. that if the business comes in between, it becomes really difficult. And yeah. I think the truth is we're all humans, and we value each other and our relationships. And if that has to end because of a business case, it's tough.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so you're at Beck for how long?
Yeah, I was there for 8.5 years.
Oh, wow.
And I really had always gravitated toward companies with really powerful core values. Mm-hmm. And so Container Store had been on my roadmap since I was a little girl shopping with my mom in San Antonio, looking at these beautiful plastic boxes. And so I was at a conference and lost trying to get in from the parking lot. And I ran into another woman also trying to find her way into this conference. And we got to talking, and she said, I just got a call. I didn't get this job at the Container Store in recruiting. And we kind of were talking, and she was like, that sounds like something you might want to do. And I was like, I would love that. And she goes, great, I'll connect you. And I thought, if someone who's just gotten rejected from a company is still advocating for that company.
That's good.
That's huge. She had a good enough experience being rejected that she would recruit for them. Like, that blew my mind. Yeah. So I interviewed and came on to manage recruitment for the Container Store, primarily the corporate office, but the company was growing their footprint. And so as new stores open, we'd also help them come up with recruiting plans in new cities. You know, it's hard when you come into a new space where nobody knows your name. So, okay, how do we get people in Huntington Beach to know the Container Store? We have a new store coming up in Virginia. What's our plan to market there? And not just for customers, but for employees. And so really helping them kind of grow the footprint. And the cool thing about Container Store was that it is a company based on conscious capitalism, mm-hmm. this idea that there can be profit, planet, and people focused. Mm-hmm. So that was a really interesting addition to my understanding of retail, which is primarily like you buy it, you use it, whatever.
Yeah.
But for a company to really care about its people meant as a recruiter, it was a great story to tell. And I just got really interested in the stories of companies and how that's infused in the recruiting process, because we all want to work in a place that has a great story, that there is meaning in your work. And so I, you know, started thinking, well, how can I add to this story? How can I share this story more as a recruiter? So I started posting on LinkedIn. I went on maternity leave, came back, and I wrote about what it felt like to be a working mom at the Container Store, what it felt like to, you know, work with the technology team that celebrates the 4th of bacon. They all bring in bacon, different dishes.
What?
On the 4th of July. Like,
interesting.
So yes.
They have their own little,
culture over there. But like sharing those stories was really fun. And then I started teaching other teams, like our distribution center managers, how to tell those stories on LinkedIn too, because they were hiring like crazy. And we came into 2020 when everybody needed office supplies because they were all moving their offices home.
Interesting.
So distribution center was going crazy, whereas retail was really slowing down. So helping those people tell that story in that moment was really important. And I got a call in May of 2020 after having my second baby that I was on furlough. There was not a need for a retail recruiter in the pandemic. So I remember having a conversation with my husband in the driveway of like, okay, so I don't know that I have a job. We have two small children. It's the middle of the pandemic. We have to work. And I think that I might just start a company. Like, there wasn't another option. And he was like, if not now, when? like, this, let's do it. So that's when Southern Lighthouse was born in June of 2020.
Okay, question. I think that so much to unpack there. But first, you know, people typically have this idea in their back of, in the back of their heads of something that they think that they can do that would bring value to others. And they kind of build this idea over a couple of years. So it sounds like you get over to the Container Store, you kind of start actively using LinkedIn. At what point, I mean, was it prior to you kind of getting this phone call that you had this idea for this business and that, you know, and the phone call is kind of what prompted you into action? Or were you like, okay, I've got to immediately figure out something else to do. And like the thought came then.
The thought came then.
Really?
I never wanted to be an entrepreneur. I never wanted to own my own business. Like, even today, 4 years in, it's still terrifying. I really like 401ks and matches. And so, no, it was never on my roadmap to start a company. It was truly from a lack of other options and desperation that is why I started the company.
So you said something that really helped you as a recruiter at the Container Store is this whole idea of conscious capitalism and the idea that the company can be, you know, I've read a lot about this, but, you know, for so long we just had this idea about business that it had to be 100% about making a profit. And people, millennials, Gen Z, just don't want to work for this company that's making a single individual this great big profit or these, like, group of shareholders this great big profit. What they want is to feel like their contributions matter and mm-hmm. they have some meaning. And so what did you take from learning that at the Container Store to kind of bring into your next business?
Yeah, absolutely. Gen Z, especially right now coming into the workforce, wants meaning. I was mm-hmm. just at a meeting at Texo talking about new grads and, you know, salary expectations, which have kind of gone through the roof after a flatline after COVID, but that Gen Z coming into the workforce wants stability because they came into a world where their parents were let go in 2008, where they went to college during the pandemic. So stability is number one. After that, they really care about work-life balance, and they care about their work having meaning and the company culture. And number five was compensation. So this generation cares so much more about the environment they're walking into, the people they're going to work with, rather than the money on the table. It is still important. They still have to pay the bills.
Of course.
But it is not number one, number two, or number three on their list of things to look for in an employer.
That's wild.
I know. I know. Which is different than the generations that have come before.
Oh, yeah. For sure. You know, something that we did a while back, I talk about this a lot, but we implemented Traction at Utilities. And one of the things that you do is you talk about like what your overall mission statement is. And it's like, what are you really trying to do here? And, you know, something that Garrett came up with was Moss wanted to make the people in the community a better place. And, you know, we really had to dig in, well, what does that exactly mean? And, you know, and I don't know that we've ever, and, you know, Garrett does such a fantastic job at LinkedIn. I don't know that we've ever really portrayed that to the outside world, though, that there's a bigger purpose here than just profit. I think that that's, sometimes I think you kind of get lost in telling that story for a company. So when you consult with a company through Southern Lighthouse, is that something that you try to get them to kind of put out there? And is that something that comes from the top person at the company, or is it something that kind of comes from the employees themselves?
Yeah, such a good question. And you're right. It really starts with, like, what are we trying to do here? Because if the message is we really want to make a lot of money, that's not going to be compelling to candidates. Yep. And honestly, when you think about business development, that's not a super compelling message for clients either. Mm-hmm. But if there is that bigger purpose, like, we are here to support the North Texas community, or we want to make Dallas a better place or a more sustainable environment, that's a message that clients and candidates can rally behind. And in terms of where that message comes from, it does start with, like, EOS and Traction understanding, like, this is our mission, and that is top down. I think the personal brand of your leaders is super, super loud. And for so many companies, it's a huge missed opportunity. Not here. Garrett is very vocal, yeah. You know, which is a win to me from a business and a recruiting standpoint, mm-hmm. Because so many companies don't invest in their leaders' personal brands, and it's just a muted channel.
Yep. I can think of all of our direct competitors. And number one, and like I was just sitting through a meeting where we were looking at our direct competitors and their brands, like their literal logos. And I recognized one of the nine. And I thought, that seems crazy to me. But then when you go and you look at them from a LinkedIn perspective or you look at their website, it's just like they've put zero effort into branding, into LinkedIn. I mean, I don't know who owns the company. I have no clue. I don't know who the upper level management is, really. I mean, some, and it's like, and that's okay. You know, maybe it's this like old school owner. But at the same time, people that are coming into the market, like, do you know how many people want to come and work for Moss Utilities because they know somebody that they either personally or know somebody that that follows Garrett? It's like, it's insane. I guess I don't understand how there's a lack of knowledge of not understanding how important this is to an organization.
Yeah.
Like, where does, I mean, how is that not like, how is that not basic knowledge?
I agree. I am 100% on board with you. I think that it is a massive missed opportunity not to use your voice and not to use it on LinkedIn. That's a B2B professional networking mm-hmm. platform is really the place to do it. And it does take time. It takes strategy and it takes consistency to continue showing up. So I'm sure those are all reasons why people are not more forward focused. I talk to a lot of people and do a lot of coaching. And the number one thing I hear is, I don't want to sound dumb. I don't know what to say. You know, it's real. It's real. It really, I think, holds us back, especially as women. It's scary to open our mouth and tell our story and be vulnerable in front of people who are our colleagues or our competitors. You know, we might sound dumb.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think the other way to think about it is like, by not opening our mouth, by not using our voice, by not telling our story, particularly on LinkedIn, people can make up whatever they want about us. Mm. And it's a huge missed opportunity for doing good.
I love that. Okay. So you're building this business from the ground up. And I'll just share our experience of meeting. So I don't know that I was connected to you. I might have been. I'm connected to a lot of people on LinkedIn. But I get this message in my inbox, and I get, this was right when I was promoted to CEO, and so I'm getting a lot of sales pitches, just, like people thinking I have way more control than I do and just trying to sell me stuff and or wanting to sell the company. So many different things. And so, I kind of scanned through them because I don't want to miss anything important. And you sent me a message and just said, hey, I looked at your LinkedIn profile and here is what I suggest you do. And you didn't follow it up with, and by the way, you know, here's who I am and here's what I would like to sell you. You were just like, hey girl, like, take a look at this, man. Get this updated. And I was like, weird. Okay, I'll do that.
You did it right away.
I did it right away because yeah. I was like, I don't know what the catch is yet. But she's got a point. You know, because it's funny because you almost, and you know, maybe this is more my personality than others, but I tend to be a little skeptical. And I'm just like, she reached out to me to help me. And so I did it. And then I was like, you know, and so then I even asked you when we talked for the first time, I was like, is that like part of your business development plan to kind of to kind of show people how you can help without, you know, really expecting anything in return? And you were like, no, I'm not that strategic. I was honestly just trying to champion you and help you.
That's right.
And so how do you think that that idea has really driven your business?
Yeah, I wish I was maybe more strategic in business development and outreach. But truly, I think in your case, and I think in so many people's cases, they undervalue what they do. My mom is a lawyer and she, you know, handles contracts for different people. And she says my female clients consistently undercharge their clients. I do a lot of like keynote speaking and public speaking. And I have found that I ask my male counterparts how much they're charging as opposed to my female counterparts, because the men are charging so much more. So I just see people, especially women, overlooking their own achievements not harnessing their value or recognizing all the things that they do. So, yeah, in your case, I was like, I'd seen a video, you got promoted from CFO to CEO, and I thought that's a great story to tell, and I wanted you to claim that for your own on your profile.
I think that's really cool. I think it really ties like directly into this idea that, you know, business doesn't just have to be about like you making a profit. Like, no, you are offering a product that can help people, and I think that that's really cool. Okay, so tell me, let me ask you this, since you're the expert in this. Any woman, man that's listening to this podcast that, you know, maybe just happened upon it, they saw it on LinkedIn, they're not active on LinkedIn, like, what would you tell them, you know, three things that they should do with their LinkedIn profile today to just get, to make it more professional, to get, to drive more people to it?
Yeah, I think of, so LinkedIn is the number one professional networking platform. Your profile is often someone's first impression of you. Even before they meet you in real life, they are probably going to check you out on that platform. And so having an updated profile is super important. One, making sure it is updated. Often I'll see people don't have their contact information. They have an old title. They have a super old photo, maybe from their wedding 15 years ago, or they have a dog in the photo. Or they're wearing sunglasses.
Oh, that's so funny.
So just making sure that the person in the picture looks like you. Mm-hmm. So if you walk into a coffee shop, no one is surprised. Mm-hmm. And then just making sure your contact information and your job are updated are really three super easy, low-hanging fruit, free, yeah, five-minute things to do just to make sure, because it really is your website. It is your professional image. It's what people are going to see and remember about you. So even before, you know, we start talking content, what do I post and what do I say? Like, just making sure that profile is up to date is really important.
Good. Okay. Let's pretend it's like 15 years from now and you've owned Southern Lighthouse for 15 years. Like, what does that look like? What have you accomplished?
That's a great question. You know, the things that bring me joy are knowing that I am making an impact and making people's lives better. And that may seem silly, like through LinkedIn, but I've seen the power of building your brand, which enables you to build your business, which enables you to bring in more money for your family, mm-hmm, have less stress in your life. So not so much for me and my family, though I want to do that, but I would like to do that for other people and other businesses too. You know, on my team, when I send out my 1099s at the end of the year, I'm like, wow, like I literally helped put money in their pocket and gave their family a little extra breathing room, and that really brings me a lot of joy.
Man, that's great. I think that's so cool. okay, so tell me what's next for you.
Yeah, so I'm super excited about teaching and training and coaching. I have an opportunity to teach at TCU in October. Cool. So I'm doing a one-day class there for executives about building their employer brand. You know, as a recruiter, I realized that there are 12 touch points that we have as an employer with candidates before they even decide to apply with us. So at Container Store, it was like, you might get a flyer in the mailbox. You might feel pain going into your shoe closet and feeling like it's super, super messy. You talk to a neighbor who had a similar problem but had a good experience at the Container Store. You drove by a billboard. You know, all of these little things impacted how you thought about the company. I remember I was interviewing and I walked into the North Park store and I just started talking to an employee and I was like, what is it really like to work here? It's my favorite question. She was like, it really is great. It really is what people say it is. And I thought, okay, if this random person who doesn't know I'm interviewing has great things to say, yeah, that's really powerful. So, you know, all along that journey, we as employers have control over some of those messages and how we make people feel, even we don't even think about. They might be a candidate one day. They could be. Everyone could be a candidate. And so treating them well throughout that journey is so important. So that's what I'm focusing on for that TCU class in October. And then I've also found when I do one-on-one LinkedIn coaching, there you know, two or three things that most people are struggling with.
Mm-hmm.
So I've built a 6-week boot camp around kind of overcoming those hurdles, from how to position yourself, how to talk about yourself, how to not worry you're sounding dumb, mm-hmm. to That's upgrading your profile. Yeah. And strategically commenting, you know, there are easy, easy things that we all can do. So I'm doing a 6-week boot camp at the end of October for a small group.
That's cool.
That was really exciting. And then I've had on my heart to write a book for like the last 20 years. And this is the year. I'm going to put it out there. I'm going to manifest it here on the podcast.
That's great.
If I say it, I have to do it now.
Yeah.
So would love to, really finish this book about LinkedIn for women leaders, how to kind of overcome those hurdles and tell your story on LinkedIn to build your business this year.
Man, that's amazing. I'm going to read that book.
Thanks.
I think that you are so well-spoken and you were just the right person to write that book. And not because, you know, like there's so many people that could write that book that are just interested in profiting from that book. But like, I think that you're interested in something so much bigger than that, which means that book's going to be so much more successful. So that's super cool.
Thank you.
Rachel, thank you so much for coming on the Pressure Tested podcast today. I really enjoyed having you.
I enjoyed being here. Thank you so much, Kelly.